Sweden also, but as colleague of mine is saying, we don't want to make a peace for Sweden. Sorry, I don't know for you.
I'm not talking to you, sir.
Oh.
Sorry.
Are you counting on your fingers?
No, I'm counting my diamonds.
You're counting your diamonds, okay. But welcome. Chairman and Chairperson and delegation. The honourable members will take a round of introduction because I don't think we all know each other in the room. So I don't want to hear that people say who's who that I'm speaking to. My name is Freddie Adams, I'm the national delegate of the Western Cape in the National Council of the Provinces. If we start from my left.
Good morning, my name is Lord.
Good morning, my name is Belen Kosheta Rateta for the Common.
Good morning, Kenneth Sinclair from the Northern Cape.
Good morning, Beth Abrams, Gauteng with the Diamonds America.
Good morning, I'm Elizabeth Bellini from the Eastern Cape. We are the Diamonds.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dumfran Tamere from Barcelona.
I'm Joseph Tenga from the Department of Mineral Resources.
My name is Daniel. I'm from PMG, Monitoring.
Good morning, my name is Fernando Zonge from Space Anatolia.
Good morning, I'm Dodi Mohate, Chairman of the State Diamond Trust. Good morning, Honorable Man, and I'm Kutis Ngayana, the CEO of the State Diamond Trust.
Good morning, I'm Ruto Musushu, Colonel Bell from the Comet.
Important aspect of the state, I would say, that it works to be able
as a response to the questions that have been asked. I think there's been something that has happened through the system here. There are some slides that are empty. They don't mean much as the presentation starts on this one. Our mandate in terms of the Diamond Amendment Act of 2005, which is absent in our 2005, is really to promote the diamond beneficiation industry and promote it through research and development. There are other areas of this mandate that are there which we do through the promotion, therefore we do them, ensuring access, equitable access to rough diamonds, because that is what we are set up to do, to make sure that in the beneficiation of diamonds there is at least that platform where beneficiators are able to purchase and access rough diamonds for them to then continue. I just want to say that this is our sixth year of operation, and as we went along and having had a new board appointed last year, chaired by Ms. Dori Mokhata here, it has been that milestone that we've gone over, and so there's been some, you know, refocus as well, but we'll see as we go along, just to let others have committed to that. Our vision is to be a catalyst for the transformation and growth of the local diamond beneficiation industry. And we have agreed on this mission, which is to ensure the acquisition of an equitable access to rough diamonds, particularly focusing on HDSA, as well as promoting the growth of the beneficiation industry through relevant interventions and establishing and maintaining a transformed client base of local diamond beneficiators. That is mission then. And the strategic objectives that we have been agreed to for this financial year and truly for a 3-year period, but obviously to be reviewed through the course of this financial year for the other 2 years and the additional year, the 3-year cycle, are as follows: that we want to contribute to the growth of the local diamond beneficiation industry, developing efficient means to market diamonds that are not suitable for local beneficiation, and developing and acquiring appropriate human support capacity. For us to achieve on the strategic objectives that we have identified, we are looking at a number of activities, and the following ones being the main ones. In order for us to therefore be able to promote this industry, we want to develop. We are currently busy developing a marketing and an industry promotion strategy, and that will be implemented once it is approved, and then through the course of the year, and then the implementation will begin. And we will be working with other, you know, state institutions in order for us to develop skills within the industry as well. And that is part of the activities that we want to do. And one of the significant ones as well being the facilitation of relevant capacity building for the historically disadvantaged clients as well as the small ones, you know, the new entrants, one person show, you know, factories that we have, as well as the contribution to the development of the regional trade and heart, which is something that is quite big out there, and a number of stakeholders at state level that are working on. Chair, I forgot to ask if I should is the questions that come as I go along, or
No, you'll finish the presentation, and then we'll hand over for questions to the members, which you will write down.
Okay.
And after all the members have asked their questions, you will get a slot to answer.
Thank you. Just by way of background, I have indicated that we were set up and established in 2007. In 10% Diamond Amendment Act of 2005, and we did open our doors in 2007. We are scheduled as a 3D government business entity in terms of the TFMA, although the Act, this Amendment Act, does provide for ways of, how we're going to get funding for the operations of the state diamond trader. The state diamond trader does not really receive funding or any transfers from the state. That has been the case since day one. And therefore, to start this operation, the state diamond trader needs to apply and acquire loan funding from the IDC and also funding to continue its trading or to do its trading operations as well. In order to make sure that there is capacity as well as there is therefore not a lot of funding, I suppose, that will be expended at that point, there was therefore that secondment of personnel from the Department of Mineral Resources and the DS. That was essentially for skilling people and making sure that the operation starts without there being that training up front or going out into the market. Something like those skills that they borrowed from the two institutions. In order also for us to be where we are today, having some financial reserves, we've had to buy and sell diamonds, which is the core of our business, and make a profit out of that. Because this is a business operation in a way, although it does have statutory, we have the statutory mandate, but we are still in that, within that business of buying and selling diamonds. Although we have not specified it yet, all in all, what we make is the gross margin in terms of all those business transactions is 4%. We always look for 4% in any trading cycle. But obviously, as the diamond market fluctuates, following up on how the economy is performing globally, from time to time we do not make the 4% and end up at 3%, but we always try as much as we can to get to the 4%, because then that makes business sense, in terms of not just the margin, but also in terms of placing diamonds where they are in terms of their value. That is how we're running the system. We have currently filled some permanent positions, and these positions are, at the cost of the state diamond trader. We've had to sit down and relook our human resource plan and decide on which positions have to be filled first in order to make sure that we look after our financial reserves. And so the critical ones we have filled, such as the position of the CEO, CFO, because the institution has to run, as well as positions of sales officers and purchasing officers, which we also, all of this really, was done on a permanent basis at the beginning of the last financial year. Before then, there was quite a number of contract positions as well as the cannon, which are still in place, as particularly from the BS side, we still have officials, and that we're working with from there. I have indicated that this is we have a new board that began last year. This was around October last year, and they've been appointed for a period of 3 years. And so they have had to come in and make sure that they take us forward from where we were in the past 5 years as well, to carry us forward. We have also made sure that we train young people in diamond sorting and valuation. And this program has been running for 3 years now. We have had 3 intakes of these young people. It's not a lot of young people that we take each time. It's about 4 each year, business 4. And the last one, we took 5 young people for training. This is an intensive training, 6 months, where we actually send them for a course. And the cost of the paid diamond traders quite a high cost to us. But without doing that, we will run the risk of not finding the right capacity to run this specialized type of business. And so this program has helped us greatly in terms of therefore even finding young people for permanent employment with a state diamond trader. We still continue to train now on the job, the last intake, which the people have just come back from their intensive business course in there at the institution. Some have been employed and while others are still in training. And we have also done quite a lot of programs that would help us deal with the issues of capacity, of HDSA clients for whom this type of businesses or this type of environment is really fairly new. And there's quite a lot that we're doing in terms of facilitation. And the previous financial years, we specifically had an objective to facilitate their development in a variety of ways, from market access to funding and to business training. And so quite a lot of that has happened over time. And exposure of these clients to various forums where we get invited, or where there are exhibitions of business where business participates, so that they can participate at that level and market their businesses and market themselves, as well as the general knowledge about diamonds and this business and the beneficiation of diamonds in those forums. So there's quite a lot that we have had to do with and for these small clients. By and large, all of them are HDSA. And we think that program has assisted in a great deal.
Thank you, CEO, for your chair. Just to take us back in terms of the past 5 years' performance for the state diamond trader, you say the first year of operation was basically just for 7 months, whereby there was a couple of purchases and sale of half diamonds. And then in our second year of operation, that's where the state diamond traders group concern was a bit of a challenge, where we experienced some losses of about 5.2 million in terms of the net loss. However, as the market improved, the state diamond trader improved its position and financial performance as well. You will see we had our peak year, which was the 2010-2011 year, where the markets were favorable in terms of the rough diamonds demand and the very good price. There we achieved revenues of about 810 million in that year of 2010-2011. And also our profits were high, at about just more than 30 million rand. And then things started again to turn in the following year, which is the past financial year, which is 2011-2012, where we managed to achieve revenues of about 433 million. You will see as well in terms of the net profit as well, that it was reducing. We achieved roughly about 23 million in terms of the net profit in that year. However, in terms of our operational expenses, they were increasing. As the CEO has explained, the state diamond trader started with the secondments of staff from both DMR and also DPS. However, the state diamond trader, through looking into its implementation of its own Asian plan, it had to employ permanent people. It had to give training to young people to train them and capacitate them in order to take over from the DBS secondments when those secondments lapse, in terms of them having the diamond valuation skills, which are the core skills for the business itself. And then in terms of the budget and performance, while the state diamond trader itself does not have allocated funds or budget from fiscus itself, it has been budgeting in terms of what it has access in, and also budgeting in terms of trying to fulfill its own objectives. The funds that are there with the state diamond trader currently, we've got our own reserves that have been built over years, that is the past 5 year period, and those reserves currently are sitting as of the last financial year at about 40 million. They help us in terms of the day-to-day operations of the business. And then the state diamond trader through IDC is having a revolving loan account, which it uses as a capital management account, where it taps into that account when it purchases rough diamonds and also sell it to its registered clients. Recently we have managed to negotiate a better interest rate with the IDC in terms of that revolving account. That is still sitting at about 50 million. And then our budget also caters for appropriate scaling of our own staff. As it has been mentioned, the core skills that are needed in the space that the state diamond trader is operating on is diamond skills, with valuation, it's split into three basically. We need people that are going to do the sales portion of it. That is the sale to our registered clients. As you may appreciate, the sale of a diamond is based on negotiation, and the valuation of diamonds is different from one stone to the other stone, so the skills are needed there. And then the other side is on the purchasing, when you purchase from the mining houses themselves. Also there's negotiations that are needed in terms of trying to get the diamonds from the suppliers at a good price, so that we are able to sell to our registered clients as a state diamond trader as well. And then the third split of that core skills of the state diamond trader is on the production side of things, where when the state diamond trader receives the diamonds themselves, they need to be sorted out into some parcels that will be favorable, or that will benefit the state diamond trader in terms of how it sells to its registered clients to get the best value for those parcels. So those are the three skills, and they are all pointing out in taking care of our clients, especially the forecast being the HDSA and small clients. Also, in terms of the state diamond trader progress, the budget strategy is aligned to our strategic objectives, which enables the state diamond trader to carry out the necessary activities to achieve these objectives. So this budget, as I've explained, it takes into account what you already have and the use of the revolving account from the IDC. As you may be aware that the available funds are not sufficient for the work required to grow the industry and the state diamond trader itself. However, the state diamond trader plans to establish partnerships with the industry stakeholders. We see this as a route that will make us achieve our objectives. Just to go back in the past 5 years, the main objectives of the state diamond trader were inward looking, whereby we're looking at making sure that the state diamond trader has its own grounding. It's stable, it's got the future growth. But after the 5 years, most of our objectives are outward looking, where now we need to make sure that the industry and the state diamond trader and the diamond beneficiation is growing to the point that the state diamond trader was set for. And then going through to the next slide, budget and performance. This is basically responding to the requirements or some of the requirements as to why we were invited to this committee. As a state diamond trader, as I said, in the past 5 years it was inward looking. We already spent in terms of our infrastructure, capital investment in terms of the computers, your servers, furniture. So in the foreseeable future, in our budget, in our next 3 year budget, we don't have any significant capital investment that is planned, as we've already done that in the last financial year, 2010-2011. Also, the state diamond trader is already benchmarking against some of the outcomes of the NDP, that is the National Development Plan, and aligning with those of DMR, which is the our reporting shareholder, Department of Mineral Resources. As per the beneficiation strategy gets implemented, the state diamond trader will contribute to its goals and thereby to the National Development Plan outcomes relevant to its business and mandate. So that's basically the focus in terms of our budget and performance as a state diamond trader. Going to the next slide, in terms of our budget for the next financial year, which is 2013-2014. This budget is informed by what has happened mainly in the past current, in the past year, looking also the past 5 years, and we're very conservative in terms of coming to the figures that we've come up to. We're budgeting a sales or revenues of about 331 million as a state diamond trader. Where those revenues, the goods that we would have sold, would have cost us about 321 million. And then that gives us a gross profit of about 9.6 million. The markets have not really been on our side in the past financial year, hence this conservative estimate. And that gross profit margin, even now we're targeting 4%. This one is giving us around about between 3 and 4% on average. Our administrative expenses, as the state diamond trader is implementing its Asia plan and also trying to be outward looking, that gave rise to an increase in terms of administration expenses. And the most, almost half of that is basically the setup and the implementation of the Asia plan. So in terms of making sure that when the DPA's secondments leave the institution, we've got capable state diamond trader, full-time permanent staff to carry on with the business. Also to build in terms of capacity as well, in terms of the support staff of the state diamond trader, whereby permanent position needs to be filled as per our approved HR plan. Also, because of the outward looking of our strategic plans, participation, engaging the other stakeholders, that will mean extra expenditure for the state diamond trader as well. Interest income. The interest income comes from the call accounts that the state diamond trader has in terms of keeping their reserves or its reserves in a safe place. And then the interest expense is coming from the use of that revolving facility from the IBC every now and again when we want to purchase rough diamonds to sell to our registered clients. There should have been net income or loss in brackets, which is a loss of about 9.8 million. It's the first time ever that we, as a state diamond trader, are budgeting for loss. However, we're hoping things or the market will improve and we will not get to that stage. Just to mention to the committee, this budget is reviewed every, there's a midterm review in terms of the budget and also our strategic plans and our risk register as well. So that is done around about September. So that will give us a good picture as to where we will fall in terms of 31 March 2014. Budget for 2013-14, state diamond trader is budgeting just the following as of year end 2014. Remember, as I said in the past financial year 2011-12, we reserve of about 40 million. Our book value of the assets for 31 March 2014, we're budgeting to have assets of about 1.5 million. And the retained income, which is our reserves of about almost 30 million, that is 29.6 million. And our cash in the bank of about 28.7 million. So that's what we're budgeting to have as of 31 March 2014. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we've come to the end of the presentation. Thank you, CEO.
So, Chair, thank you very much for listening. I thought it would be appropriate for me to summarize and see what you can do. Hopefully what you have heard makes some sense, and I'm saying some, because as the CEO quite rightly indicated at the beginning of her presentation, it is the first time, you know, the state diamond trader engages with the committee of this nature. And we are hoping that this will be the start of many a conversation around exactly what this entity is about. What you have heard obviously gives you an outline of the day-to-day activities in a very summarized way. What is meaningful is a deeper understanding of the role of the state diamond trader and why the government of South Africa established this entity in the first place. Clearly, as a 3D entity, although we do not receive state funding, we do comply with the, you know, PFMA. And therefore, the committee should be assured that as far as that is concerned, the compliance issues, the assurance issues are taken care of in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And when necessary, from time to time, you know, reports can be submitted to this committee. But I think what is key is to take out a few areas, you know, that have been covered seemingly in an operational way and leave them out at a strategic level so that the committee engages both with the strategy as well as the operations and, you know, that comes with the nature of the organization. And I believe, Chair, is that the success of the state diamond trader lies on the impact, you know, in the impact that it will make events as it is on the rationale for its establishment by government. If our job is to source diamonds from the producers, the mines, and then sell them off to the best price giver, we believe we will not fulfill that role. Our role should be about understanding the entire diamond beneficiation value chain and seeing what its impact should be to the economic development of South Africa. That is exactly when you go beyond the legalese of an act of parliament and you understand the true objective is to ensure that there is transformation in the diamond industry, there is economic development and critical mass that results from the skills in beneficiating diamonds in South Africa. And there is a serious impact in terms of those so-called HDS firms not only gaining access to the diamonds, but being significant players in the economy, utilizing, hopefully, the skills that they will learn over time. And that, if you go beyond the words in the objectives, etc., is what we should be looking at, the future around it. This is obviously based on the fact that when you look at the whole mining industry in South Africa and the way we do things, you know, as a continent, as a country, beneficiation has been the last of our minds. And obviously we are now part of that government strategy to and that is what we should be looking to achieve as an SDT. Our role, therefore, must be a catalytic one to ensure this transformation that we are talking about. The impact must take us from diamond mining to diamond beneficiation all the way to the last user of the diamond. At the moment, we are not funded, as the CEO and the CFO has said, by government. So to do all of these things, we are going to need to have a sustainable funding base. We are independent from the fiscus as far as funding is concerned. However, we need to understand exactly whether as part of government this is a sustainable model on which we operate. And therefore, whatever future strategy that we have come up with has got to go hand in hand with the level of funding, number one, but it's got to go directly to what we have to achieve in the end as a country through the State Diamond Trader and its partners. We have to continue to learn. We are a developing country, but we have to learn the lessons from other countries who produce diamonds and see how we can continuously improve our positioning as a country as far as this precious resource, you know, is concerned and how it becomes a catalyst for economic development in the country. And therefore, our positioning into the future is going to be critical in order to recognize those lessons and also take the good lessons out of our fellow diamond producing countries and ensure that we fulfill the purpose. And therefore, ladies and gentlemen, you can take the presentation as it is. We can look at the financials and how we have performed, but the ideal future is one that takes us beyond the day-to-day operations, which, as I have said, we comply, and therefore we ensure that the assurance for government, especially through our principal department, the Department of Mineral Resources, all the compliance issues are taken care of. Our concern as a board goes beyond that and it goes to how this committee will see and engage on the future positioning of the State Diamond Trader. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I am of the board of the State Diamond Trader. The members recommend over to you for questions from that. Thank you.
happens is that it's really affecting that the state arm treasure only comes to this committee at the end of our term. Because as the chairperson in the delegation would know, next year's election, and in all probability there would be a change in committees and membership of parliament and so on. Because what I've heard and seen here today, chairperson, as a representative of the Northern Cape, with due respect, is not good news. This is a very sad situation. And I want to go so far to say that the state diamond trader is in serious trouble. If you look at the reflection on the finances and in this strategic plan, you can see that the decline, despite the utterances by the CFO that might get better, he blamed it on market conditions. It seems that there's some fundamental shortcomings in the state government trade and the way it operates. Fortunately, Chair, I've over time raised this issue about the state government trade, also with the minister and the department, formally and informally. And we were brought under the impression that this entity, albeit in a new type of manifestation, is doing relatively well. We first picked up this problem when the department briefed us, and as part of that we received the documentation. So Chairperson, I'm very concerned. I think the serious red flag in terms of sustainability. The issue of officials from the BF that was conduct, but now is undercover by the training of new people, that one with due respect, I would believe, is a facade. This is a specialist environment where you deal with specialist people that you don't train and you don't get every day and in the year they same level as season. So my first remark, Chairperson, is one of serious concern. The second one is the one of the location of the state diamond trade. This issue was raised by many people, including the leadership of the Northern Cape at various levels. I recall when we were in the ARC, the MEC of Economic Development specifically pleaded with the President as part of the Parliament and the People Programme to relocate and rethink the location of the state diamond trade. There was reference, my Chairperson, to the regional hub. To my best understanding, that it seems that that regional hub will be in Botswana and Gaborone. And once again, our people in South Africa, specifically the Northern Cape, will not benefit from that. So I want the Chairperson and the team to pronounce on the issue about the relocation of the state diamond trader to where it is supposed to be, that is English. We can have the most wonderful plans in terms of beneficiation and localization, but if we don't implement, our people remain poor, and you will have 4.5 empty holes that you've got in Kimberley at the moment. The people don't get that benefit of the minerals that have been taken out there and taken to other places, mainly to Europe and Russia and so on. So that is my second remark, the question of the diamond trade. Then the third issue, Chair, is an issue about the Northern Cape. The Northern Cape government established an institution called the Kimberley International Diamond and Jewelry Academy, KICHA. Now KICHA, as we speak, is embroiled in a lot of controversy. And I want the state diamond trader to today pronounce on this issue because it's a serious matter. I've asked the minister a question, the Minister of Mineral Resources. That question had to do with KICHA. And of great concern is that despite once again of all these good intentions that we had yesterday, it seems that in terms of the structure of how do you deal, how do you empower institutions like KITCHA, that has not been finalized. Because in terms of the answer that I received from the minister on the 1st of March, she indicates, I ask her whether with regard to diamond beneficiation, the department has been involved in the establishment, application, management of KITCHA. She said no. She said no. Now the state diamond trade specifically deals, specifically runs with a mandate of the department. I then further continue whether the Northern Cape provincial government of any of the parastatals that are reporting to it has the license to trade in diamonds. Then she said no. According to our records, the Northern Cape provincial government does not have diamond trading license. So this is a very serious matter, because the Northern Cape government, in terms of the answer of this of the minister, traded illegally because they didn't have a license to do that. An entity that seeks to trade in diamonds is obliged by law to acquire a relevant license through the South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulation. They don't have that license. But the worst is, Chairperson, is that the diamonds that were bought for KITCHA, it was all over the news, 8 million rands of diamonds were stolen before they could have been beneficiated and even been used to trade the people that they wanted. So I want to raise this issue and put it to the state diamond trader that they must please take us in their confidence, in our confidence. They must take us in their confidence in terms of what's happening with this teacher in the North. So those are the three issues that I want to raise. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, just on a point of order there, I think the last remark that you made about the theft of the diamonds, I think that case is subject before the courts. I believe there's an investigation going. So I will expect the SDT to speak on that one. Please. Honorable Mwuri.
Thanks. I think I echo the sentiment of my colleague that it seems the state diamond trade it don't achieve its objective, because it originally, as far as the question is known, that the state diamond trade is there so that the security supply of diamonds for the beneficiation of the industry and to make sure that there is transformation in the industry. Now, if you're sitting with the 9 million rand loss now within 3 years, and you've got also interest that amounting on your fees, you know, it's sitting at 2 million interest rate, right? 96. Now you've got this revolving credit to the ITC. My question is, how are you going to repay the money to ITC? Okay, it is a state entity as well. There might be some leeway on that issue. But key is, are you really going to achieve the objective of training people and making sure that there's a secure supply of all the diamonds that we choose in the country? Are you able to get that 10% that the diamond trade that they demonstrate because according to you, at least 10% of the unpolished diamonds, and then you take those, you benefit the training and stuff like that. In short, Jefferson, do you see yourself in 5 years' time, let me say in 10 years' time, really getting out of the situation and improving and your objectives? At the moment, this is really, very, very good.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, and thank you for the presentation. Yes, I'd like to echo and thank Paul Slice for the state diamond traders in the crisis. And my one of my questions is, I'd like to know why the state diamond trade did not support the when the 150 million was given to by IBC and Jeff, the Halton Enterprise Propeller, to assist in the state diamond trade did not assist in, while in the one instance you're saying that you are developing the HDSI, and that was one of the HDSI. And Chairperson, I'd also like to know why do, I don't know the answer's response, why do we export our diamonds and then to India and then import it again? Why can't we develop the proper skill here? While a couple of years ago, many people have developed the skill and they are unemployed at this point in time because of some companies closing down. What happens to these previously disadvantaged people? They are unemployed, they are skilled, they are just looking for work. Why don't they get employed? Why reinvent the wheel? Then also on the new training sorting, is that the only training you're doing? What about the diamond cutting? Then maybe we won't be exporting diamonds if we get skilled diamond cutters in within South Africa. Although I must say that I know quite in Johannesburg, we used to have a whole diamond trade in the bottom of Johannesburg downtown in Dornfontein. That whole trade is closed down. There's many people in housing that is unemployed, that is skilled. To the chairperson, I want to know what is the difference between an HDSI, millionaire, and a small client, because the chairperson mentioned that the so-called HDSI. Now, we hear many a times the term HDSI, HDI, HD, whatever. In this instance, people will be millionaires, and they will still be benefiting. So I'd just like to know the difference of that and how do we actually fit the HDSI for the HDI in. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable the Mayor. So, I'm just comparing my questions and so on with the advantage of asking that, so that they take all these questions. We're dealing with the state diamond traders, and now I underline each word, state diamond trader, that does not get money from the state, that gets a loan from IBC, which is, IBC is a state entity. It looks like a conundrum. Now the question I have is, there is some uniformity of state involvement, whether directly or indirectly. Does the Auditor General have an appetite with you, despite the fact that you don't get any funding from the fiscus? The Auditor General interested in you? If yes, what has been the past comments and of the AG with regard to your performance? And whether this 9 million has been identified by the Auditor General? I'm trying to check. Is it possible just to name a few beneficiaries that have benefited since your inception? I mean, you needed to support SME development. How many diamond imaging companies pass through the incubation program? And just a few years ago, just last year, the president said, I believe this is not the name dropping, each and every state entity and department must show how they are going to contribute in job creation. And where do we find this in this? Your contribution, what is your target, and how are you going to do it? say, I want to ask other questions. Why they have responded? That is the butcher.
Chairperson of Madhav. You're fine.
I'm fine, sir. Chairperson. Actually, they forgot me. As though the answering my colleagues, they will then be able to maybe tell us. Okay, and my apology, Chairperson, I came late. It's my apology. As they will be answering, maybe they will be able to cover. I'll want them to cover the challenges that they are having. How are they going to come up with a plan so that they make sure that they can come across this challenge again? Thank you.
Okay, yeah, you know, I'm also worried about, to echo on your sentiments, Honorable Comrade, that here we've got a state diamond trade, but it must get loans from another entity instead of getting funds from the Treasury. I think it's something that we need to address as a committee, to address that, why doesn't Treasury give the funds? I think with a little bit of more capital and funds that they've got, they can then overcome the challenges and do much more than they can do now. You know, because at the end of the day, these are the people that sells and trade and markets the product that comes from the earth. So I think that it's a matter that we really need to push as a committee. But Matt, over to you.
Chair, just this last one. The issue of sub-complement of the SDG, so that we know how your arm is well, you know, structured, including since you are quite old now, more than 7 years old, people with disabilities and so on. You know the target of 2, which you are going to increase to 20. But they have met it.
Over to you, Chairperson and the delegation.
Thank you, Chair. It does appear that the committee is quite aware of our existence and what has been happening and the things that we're doing at the State Diamond Trader. And you know, in one way, we really are excited about that, because at least then we know that our successes and challenges have, you know, a platform where they also get discussed and looked at. Honorable Sinclair, he raises the issue of you know, things being in decline, and the issues that have been raised with the department and minister formally and informally. And issues of sustainability. I do want to say this to the committee, that the State Diamond Traders' future or sustainability has always, from its 5 years of existence, has always been an issue that is just here in our eyes all the time. You know, we like, what is it that needs to happen to make sure not only that we increase our footprint, but that we give assurance to ourselves, even internally, that there is a future in what we're doing.
without the beneficiation strategy of the country having been passed, and you know that is before 2011 when it was passed, there really were all of these issues in our minds, you know, what is going to happen. But obviously, you know, we knew that the strategy was being developed and being, you know, discussed and tabled at the relevant, you know, forums, that, you know, it, you know, for it to be finalized. But post that, we then said that we have found a home that is appropriately there, that South Africa is saying that it wants to beneficiate its minerals and therefore benefit from not only the skills that come with beneficiation at, you know, at source, so to speak, but also just benefit from the revenues and the development that would that come with beneficiation, instead of sending all our raw material out of the country. So the issue of sustainability is there. We're still talking about it even today. But from where we are, because I do want to inform the committee that between 2008 and 2012, I was among the candidate people from the department. And so it was always the issue, what is going to happen to the trader? But, you know, it was that issue initially. And at some point, it, you know, it did feel like we are now getting somewhere, because one, even the relationships that we were having with the industry, particularly locally, which were quite volatile and really unhappy relationships, have settled. You know, the industry has accepted that there is state participation amongst its foes, and we are relating better, and hence we're talking about going forward, establishing and continuing to cement this relationship, because through this relationship we see that that collaboration is not just going to be talking to the sustainability of the State Diamond Trade as an organization, but it's going to be talking to the sustainability of the diamond beneficiation industry in this country. And so working together in that manner is what we're looking forward to. Obviously, the issue that is raised by Honorable Damede and the chairperson, and I think the other honorable members in one way or another, the issue of being safe and yet there being no funding, that's a big issue. An issue that I believe that the minister is seized with, and she's dealing with the minister in the Department of Finance to find a resolution around those issues. But as I continue to talk and talk to the issues of sustainability, I do want to say this in response to Honorable Sinclair as well. You know, he raised the issue of our training program being probably more of a facade than something that is going to take the trader forward, bearing in mind that we have procurement from the BS. On the one hand, I agree with you, Honorable Sinclair. Diamond knowledge, you know, you can't acquire it in a year or 2 years and then say you're an expert. You cannot do that. And I think that this is why the department, in its wisdom at that time, decided that, you know, we want to get involved in this and therefore provide raw materials or rough diamonds to the industry. But we're not just going to do it, you know, taking people from the street or from government and say, run this thing, and you are going to make it. And hence the secondment, the contract and the discussions and secondment eventually of personnel from the BS to then, you know, work with the state diamond trader. But as a matter of some comfort, maybe on the other hand, therefore, Honorable Sinclair, is that we are seeing the benefits of this change. We are seeing young people that we took from the streets, basically, or from their homes or from colleges, who have gone on, you know, to train, because of the 6 month training and then coming back on the job. We've seen the development of these young people. And we are seeing that even on a daily basis, as they buy and sell, that the skill is improving significantly. And then the third one tells me that even though they now have, you know, the first batch now have 3 years of training with us, and some have been employed as well, they're still not at the peak. Even the people that have come through on the secondment contract from the BA, some have got 10 years experience, but they still are not mastering the game, you know, because no diamond is similar to the next one. So it is a learning, you know, a continuous learning environment where, you know, we just want, we make sure that they are continuously exposed to diamonds, whether we're buying at that time or not buying. But because they've gone in there and done the sorting and evaluation, that's another way of also continuing to learn. So we're seeing them coming out and learning and being able to buy and being able to sell, but we are mindful of the fact that this is going to be a lifelong lesson for them, that they need to continuously learn. But at the same time, as I did indicate in the main presentation that critical skills have been filled, and we're looking at how do we feel those critical skills were now at the core of the business. We you know, as we fill, you know, positions such as manager at sales, you know, with the departure of the DM, of the DBS, you know, personnel, or the ending of a contract, of the contract, you know, we are looking at getting people of that caliber, 20 years in the industry, 15 years in the industry, to work with the young people that we already have and are in training as well. I do want to say to the committee, when we reduce it to writing like the numbers projecting into the future, it does present a somewhat gloomy picture, you know, but I must say that there is this thing that we are tied to the global market of diamonds, and so we get affected positively and negatively, and it's not easy even on a year-to-year basis to say the industry, the markets are going to perform better than last year or not. Sometimes we get surprised as we walk through the year to get to better performing market. But it's an issue that we're focusing on, and the minister is working quite hard at that. Even the issue of the regional hub, Honorable Sinclair, we're not talking about Cameroon or Botswana is another country. We're talking about a regional hub initially, you know, we're talking about the country. We're talking about, you know, the things that we now trying to put in place, about the provinces that we want to work with, you know, and even just that hub, you know, so that we promote South Africa as a whole and making sure that the hub within Gauteng itself is not just going to benefit, you know, local beneficiaries, but it's going to also be a route to increase our economic development as a country, not only as a province, and certainly not as just a state diamond trader. But all that is still in the development phases, in its development phase, and we're working with the department on all those issues. The issue of relocating or the location of the state diamond trader, I have been asked this question on a number of occasions, even by MECs out in the Northern Cape, and in various meetings that I've had with them about the state diamond trader or about supply, etc. And I've always said this to them, that this is a Pretoria issue, this is a minister's issue, and it certainly cannot be answered by the state diamond trader. It requires the minister to respond to it, and I do not have a response to that. We're here to serve as a state demonstrator, and the minister, as the shareholder, is the one who's looking at everything that she's putting together and looking at how do you then do this? And there is that one practical issue maybe that, you know, sometimes, you know, we have said that quite a lot of Dhammas and Kimberley and the Northern Cape are associated with Dhammas, but sometimes we just look at the logistics of moving Dhammas as well around and saying that maybe we need to be a bit more central about it, but that is us, the state Dhamma trader, thinking about it and not being, you know, the people who say that if a decision gets made by the principals that the trader moves to Kimberley, that we will say no. We cannot say that, but it's a decision and a statement that is to be made by the principals, which is not the state Dhamma trader, so we cannot pronounce on that. He also, Honorable Sinclair, talked about Fiji as the Northern Cape. I am aware, and I have been told, and the strategy, the diamond strategy of the Northern Cape has been presented to the state diamond trader, to me in particular, on a number of occasions. And I know that one of the pillars of this strategy is the state diamond trader being in Kimberley. That has been, you know, said. I mean, I've seen this presentation, and the first time it was one of the pillars, state diamond trade, and I was taken aback because I didn't even know what they meant, and it was explained. I have also had the occasion of even going to see Kija, the facility out in Kimberley. Beautiful facility, and I just think that if everything gets, you know, as it thinks and it develops itself, you know, as Kija, we would be able to deal with Kija as a business partner or whatever the partnership would be, even from where we are still today in Johannesburg. And because it is a good initiative to have cutting and polishing in Kimberley, and hopefully also, you know, the beneficiation further down, cutting and polishing. But again, they would have to have the correct licenses. You know, they would have to have licenses for them to deal with the state diamond trader, because there are criteria, you know, for clientelleship with the state diamond trader, and one of those criteria being a beneficiation license, you know, with all its requirements, and the other being, for instance, an operating factory, the other being having a, you know, valid tax clearance certificate, because if you don't have that, the state diamond trader is not going to sell to you. So even Kita would have to ensure that they are ready and they have everything in place. They have spoken to us, we have spoken to them, and I am in no way able, Honorable Sinclair, to talk to any controversies in around Kija. I'm not privy to them, so I don't know what to say.
Sorry, just coming. You don't have to talk about it. I think the minister spoke at the briefing about it, and if there's any other questions that we need, the minister has invited Honorable Sinclair to deal with and to contact with the director also in that occasion about the location of the state diamond trade, about Kija. As far as my memory serves me correct, the minister also has dealings with the ABC in the Northern Cape.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm very
That's just the 21 guns route for the person of Canada, so that's fine.
Chair, with due respect, I thought it was because you're protecting the minister, because the minister is accountable, but we're engaging the state diamond trader on a very serious issue, on issues that the minister, with due respect, because it's a loose standing entity, the minister can't respond to these issues. The minister's tried to justify it on many occasions, but we're trying to get to the factual situation about what is this Pretoria decision. What is this feature? I mean, we've got a lot of information. teacher supposed to operate, but the critical issue is that teacher is operating outside the framework that this government creates. I don't think, with due respect, that's an issue for the master. The people, the people that you're not trying to explain that.
No, like I said, if my memory serves me correct, the minister has promised that he will engage with the counterparts in the province. Isn't that where Kija falls or resource on that? He will engage with the counterparts in the province and then get back to the committee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Under the regulatory authority. I think she will deal with that. So let's respect that and let's move on with that presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of the Northern Cape not having government, so not having diamond trading licenses, I'm not even sure how the Northern Cape as a government, you know, the government there would have a trading licenses, and that's the honourable member is talking about Kija, which definitely would have to have the relevant licenses if they are to hold, you know, rough diamonds and beneficiate diamonds. They have to comply with the rules of this country. And the last time I had a presentation from them, they had applied or somehow had, were waiting for the result of an application with the South African Diamonds and Precious Metals Regulator. I will go on now to the questions that were asked by Honorable Mguni. Honorable Mguni, I do not think that we will not achieve our objectives. The reason I say that is that when the board sits to look at what it needs to do, and as they said in January, they also looked at what they have in terms of resources, and you know, within these available resources and this potential in terms of buying and selling, we should be able to do this, you know, come the end of this financial year and the coming 3 years. Yes, and I did say earlier that on paper the picture does look gloomier than it actually is, but I think that we'll soldier along, you know, despite the fact that we're still talking about issues of funding, we're talking about issues of, you know, further development of the SADA and most of the issues of growing the industry and contributing as a state diamond trader to the growth of this industry. Indeed, there is that, you know, loss that is there in our budget, in our 3 year budget. Because when the CFO presented earlier, he talked about us budgeting quite conservatively, because we're driven by what the performance that we see this year, and we say, well, what are the indications out there in the other diamond centers in the world? Is there going to be a better performance out there? Because that is what drives us as well. Now, from time to time, we get to issues in India where they would have issues around exchange, you know, the exchange control or loans, and you know, banks calling back loans, and we get to issues of the crisis in Europe and the American economy not, you know, doing that well. These are some of the consumer countries or destinations of diamonds, of polished diamonds in the world, or even diamond jewelry and other things to do with diamonds. And so when they're not performing well, we do get affected, particularly because we are in the luxury sector of the economy. And so being there, we always need to be mindful of the fact that when an economy is not doing well, we are going to be affected much more than maybe, you know, food stores and the food industry, because they, you know, will be affected first.
Okay.
So, and now when it comes to the loans that we do take from IGC, this is a revolving facility, and we have never defaulted on the loan from IGC, which is what drove the better interest rate that we have now negotiated with the IGC, because of our track record in terms of paying back, in terms of handling ourselves when it comes to issues of this loan facility. And so we are confident that each time we take the loan and to buy diamonds, that's what we're going to do. We'll be able to pay this money back to the IGC without impacting negatively on our name as a borrower. In terms of training people,
just to add to what the CEO is saying through the chair, Honorable Ngoni, I think if we sum up what almost all the members have raised around sustainability, it comes in capitalization, and the question raised, also by Honorable Samaria, that, you know, any company needs to be capitalized, and this being a state-owned entity, there is a need to examine the current funding, which we have done, you know, as a board together with the team at UBCR. And very much central to that today is the role of government in terms of capitalizing the state and increase. Secondly, it's the nature of the business, or the core business, which is sales. And perhaps next time what we can do, and hopefully Honorable Sinclair, you will still be there, is to really plot the global performance of diamond traders, if people who are training in private capacity with listed companies, as government, etc. For example, with Botswana being very much a partnership between government and private entities, what has their performance been? And that goes very much to the sales and to saving, to revenue and revenue, to the profits, you know, at the end. So I think it's important that we make a contribution, we get seen in the context of the global performance of the diamond trade as a whole. So I thought, you know, those things cannot be taken in isolation. I mean, we can get all the capital we want, from government. But if you can't sell the diamond and the buyers, at the same diamond trader, are selective about what they buy. If you can't sell them, you know, there is nothing you can do. And the your ability to sell is when people have got excess capacity to be able to buy things that are discretionary when you look at their budget. And diamonds are not necessarily, you know, a necessity, especially in times of crisis. And if you look at the graph, and you look at what happened around 2008-09, you saw the diamond industry virtually going towards collapse, because that disposable cash with which people would buy was in short supply.
Thank you. We are not yet getting up to, you know, the full 10% of the room. And the reasons are varied, you know. One, from having the bulk of the smaller diggers and producers, you know, having taken us to court. You know, not only us, but the department and the Department of Finance as well. And right from the day that the year that we opened. So we still are not accepting anything from them, but from those that we are accepting diamonds, we try. It's just that there is this issue as well of the run of mine, a representative sample that we have to buy. When we know and have established that the beneficiaries in this country do not beneficiate anything that is less than, you know, 2 carats, you know. They just don't want that. They want, you know, 2 carats up and also better qualities as well. You know, anything that is they will tell you they want VVS1, VVS2, and all of those it's because of now they want the best out of the best. There was a question that was asked, if I may just bring it into this one, that why is it that we're exporting diamonds only to re-import, you know, maybe the finished product? One of the things that's happening in this country with the beneficiator, therefore beneficiating only the large stones, you know, or larger stones, is that then the Indian market, you know, cuts and polishes the small stones. And by and large, 90% or more, as we have, you know, we like to point out, of South Africans wear imported jewelry, you know, and it's only those that are wearing larger stones that may well be cut and polished in this country, who may well be the people who are wearing diamonds and you know, diamond jewelry that has been beneficiated in this country. This is one of the things that we may want to change going forward. Do we change it by saying we need to cut and polish even the small stones, or do we want to improve on the consumption of larger stones in this country? We want to do all of it, because in the long run, all of these diamonds are produced in this country, and gold, platinum are all produced in this country as well. So there is a potential for some of these things to happen. And with the beneficiation strategy in place, it is our, you know, mantra, so to speak, that we just want to get there and find a way of bringing all of these separate pipelines together to give us finished product. We do see ourselves 5 to 10 years down the line having a bigger footprint and a more solid footprint, you know, in the country and outside the country, and really making sure that so many of our South African people know about diamonds, consume local diamonds, locally produced diamond jewelry, and then they appreciate what we have in this country instead of just buying off the shelves. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, that's what is available to them.
Yes, so can I just add on this question around export to India and bringing it back in beneficiated form? I'm afraid that our observation is that it's going to be quite a long journey, you know, to bring this back to South African chain. Those skills have been honed over a very long period of time, and are quite generational in the context of imparting. And therefore, there has to be a very concerted effort in parallel to other areas of developing through the value chain to get people learning in South Africa how to polish the small diamonds. It is not going to be an overnight success and an overnight process. But even as you bring those skills to the fore, there has to be an appetite, you know, for the purchase and for the commensurate in the marketing of the small diamonds in South Africa. So I think what we are seeing is a nation that is becoming more and more aware of what it is missing in the context of its own resources and its own minerals. But I think what the committee is challenging the state diamond trader, the Department of Mineral Resources, and therefore itself as government, is what, how do we then chart that journey? We may achieve certain milestones, but the country has got to have a clear strategy. For example, the Botswana will tell you that they have a clear strategy, and that strategy is to do this. Zimbabwe equally is coming up with its own strategy. What is our strategy? Our strategy is to do this. If we firmly believe that South Africa, our strategy should be beneficiation, the challenge should be how are we going to do it. And I'm afraid, sir, we are not going to be able to do it at the same time and trade under the current funding conditions. Absolutely not. This is going to be just eating from hand to mouth, surviving until someone comes and buys a bigger packet, and we survive to the financial year end. It is not the strategy of the state diamond trader. It's going to be the strategy of South Africa, and funding is very much at the heart of it.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Chair. Honorable Adrans, apart from the issue of the crisis mode, you raised the issue of why we didn't support a company supported by Housing Enterprise Container. I think I kept that correct. I'm not sure which company Honorable Abraham is talking about, unless we're talking about Western. Okay. Which, yes, African Roman. Honorable Abraham, I do want to say this here, and say it for recording as well. We supported Wage, which is African Roman. It's not like we didn't call them in and offer them diamonds. We certainly offered them diamonds. And we have records to show that we did offer them. They came, they went. They came, they went. I have been there ever since the African Roman Great Camp has been in place. And I suppose there could have been other things as well that were in the blind spot of all of us, including the funding agencies and the company itself. But we certainly did support it in the manner that we're supposed to be supporting other companies. But I'm going to not elaborate on that because I believe that there's more work that's being done, or to look at what happened, you know, why did that not, you know, lead to the dream that it was supposed to be. The issue of exporting and re-importing, I think that the chairman and myself have spoken to Honorable Abrams, and it's something that we're working towards, but it's going to be a long-term issue. But I'm not going to go back to that, as the chair has already indicated, as did the chair. You asked also the question of what has happened to the retrenched people, you know. I'm certain that most of those that have been retrenched are around, you know, where, you know, they are, and some have been lost to other industries and other jobs, or no jobs at this point in time. And I do want to say this, that it has been said that we have contributed, or we have made sure that there is some decline in the industry. We have looked at this and re-looked at it, as the state diamond did, and asked ourselves this question: in what way would we have contributed to this? Because the reality of it is that 2008-09 came, and quite a lot of of businesses were wiped out because of the economic crisis that came through in that time. And it's not because the state diamond trader came in, you know, on stream. One of the things that the state diamond trader does, which is distinct from what tender houses and other areas, you know, particularly tenders do, is that we allocate to clients, and we don't get different offers for one parcel. Once we've said, here's a company, we're calling this company, left on the lease, or left on, in terms of these goods, this is what we allocate to you, and for 36 hours, that whole business is yours. You need to make up your mind within that 36 hours and say to us, I am buying, I am not buying, and this is what I'm putting on the table, and you negotiate, you tell us this, and we speak to you back within the 36 hours, and then after you have made a decision as a beneficiary that you're not buying, that is the only time that then we remove your name from a parcel. So we do offer a much more supportive environment in terms of supply. But at the same time, I'm not suggesting that people always buy, because they don't always buy. And so we end up having to take parcels and sell them to other people. You ask me why we're training only in sorting and valuing. The people that we're training internally in sorting and valuing is the people, you know, potentially from whom we will then be able to employ. But it's people, you know, who are in the core business of the state diamond trader, because We are talking and Bedouin. At the point of inspection, as the law says, at the point of purchasing, at the point of sale, we are talking and Bedouin. And so those are the skills that are critical for us as an institution, much more than, you know, in cutting and polishing. But when we then facilitate training for our clients, that is in cutting and polishing, that is still also in sorting and valuing, etc. I do want to also indicate here that we have seen that most of the clients, the small clients that we have, are people who did not go to school to train as business people. Now, people who have been employed in the industry and were retrenched and then set up their own businesses. And so there is that gap between knowing how to run a business and having the core skill of cutting or polishing, because all of them have either or. They don't just have all of the skill of cutting and polishing in one person. And so there is that gap of knowing how to run a business and run it successfully, you know, while you have the core skill of cutting and polishing, and also the skill of marketing your cut and polished diamonds, which is also really, you know, at least elementary, you know, for most of the small clients that we have. Chair, you have to talk to the issue of the difference between HDSA dealer and
thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if I am an authority of how an HDSA billionaire comes about, and what choices we have in the country. I read somewhere, I think it's sometime at the weekend or something, which was actually a question on one of the radio stations in a financial program. I think it was a Global Quiz, Chair, where they were asking the question, where do dollar billionaires live globally? And if you look at analysis that has been made by entities such as Forbes magazine and so on, I'm not sure whether we should be taking pride in the fact that some of the top three in some of those, you know, top 10, top 50, etc., come from South Africa, or go back and say, yes, it's great that Africans have been recognized in this way, but look at the sea of poverty all over around us, that we have this massive gap, you know, that we can't close. And I'm not exactly sure what, at a personal level, I believe is an answer. But I think that as you rise, you should be able to make a significant contribution to the development of others around you. And therefore, what the government tries to do is what we should multiply as private enterprise, because government simply cannot fund everything in terms of economic development as well as enterprise development. So there needs to be a partnership in terms of creating those rent and hopefully dollar billionaires in the future, and ensuring that there is a closing of the gap, you know, process that happens, because I think it must be a source of national pride that we have those. So you talk about historically disadvantaged South Africans. It is a fact that some of those have risen much faster, Chair, than others have, purely because they have better access to some of the resources. They have better skills to know how to navigate, you know, those difficult waters, and they have benefited from the transformational legislation that South Africa has got. And they are small ones, they are large ones. Hopefully you want to ensure that those who start small rise and become bigger. However, there will always be small business, and I think, Chair, we should encourage that. We should encourage small, medium, micro and medium enterprise, because most of the jobs of the future are going to be created there. When you look at the 2008-2009 crash, it happened to the giants. And the giants are not, and the elephants are not able to rise as quickly as an entrepreneur
who employs 5 to 10 people rises when something happens and they have to shut down business. So it's both. You know, on the side of creating that environment in which a small business will grow, and that environment in which if that small business gets their business marketed, you know, properly, they will hopefully one day rise to be major businesses.
Thank you. Honorable Gamete, state demonstrator and no state funding. I think that we have spoken about this issue here. It is one of those anomalies that, you know, right from the beginning happened, and so we ended up with loan funding from the IDC to even open the doors, and later on to buy diamonds much more than using that facility for operational expenditure, which we don't use it for. We get audited externally by the AG, and ever since we opened our doors, it's been the AG that has been doing that. Obviously, we do have internal auditors as well. Despite all of this, Honorable Kamete, we have never ever received a qualified audit. To cite a mistake, that the last one, which was in 2012, that was a clean audit. It was not even an unqualified audit, it was just a clean audit. So within all of that, you know, we're running a clean ship. We're running a very tight organization. I do want to say that I think that we know what we're supposed to be doing in terms of the PFMA, the Diamond Act, Amendment Act, and we try hard to make our board and to make you proud that there is this institution which has so many challenges. But when it comes to government and administration, their things are in order. You know, so we have received those audit reports that we probably have seen over time in our annual report. The AG does see also our budget, and they look at that, they see what we say we're going to do, and they've seen what we've done over time. And I suppose when we get to a stage of whether we are a going concern business, you know, like they did ask us in 2008-09 whether we see ourselves, and we said yes, we see ourselves going on, and then there was racism an issue if they start getting concerns about us, you know, going forward. We've had a number of, you know, companies buying and from the state demonstrator. I will not be able to give names as such and say this company and this company at this point in time. But you've had a number of them, large and small, and one of the companies, for instance, was in the Eastern Cape, in one of the IDZs in the Eastern Cape, and it had that initial, well, some sort of support for it to be there from the Eastern Cape government, not financial, but just some, you know, that they wanted to be in the IDZ. And so we've worked with companies as large as that and others that are larger based in Johannesburg and Cape Town, but in quite a varied number of clients. And now when you buy run-of-mine diamonds, and you also have to find ways of selling run-of-mine as well. Now for the larger ones, it gets easier. It's not easy, but it gets easier to sell them run-of-mine, because then they have a way of dealing with that. Much better than the small clients for whom we effectively cherry pick, because we want to sell to them what their factories, small as they are, can cut and polish and not burden them with run of mine, which would otherwise wipe out all those small businesses. We try hard to actually see them grow, the small businesses and the HDSA businesses, because we just have to make sure that they grow. They cannot deal with the run of mine, because when you look at it, it really can depress a person if they don't know what to do. In terms of job creation and how we are going to contribute, I, you know, internally through the training program, we are doing something. But at the same time, as we take on new clients and as we look at clients and what they require, we do always check with them, jobs, how many jobs have you created, etc. We know that jobs have been on the decline in the industry because of how the big giants, as the chairman was saying, were affected, you know, right from 2008-09, and so they shed quite a number of jobs. But our view is really that this, the beneficiation of diamonds and even jewel fabrication, that can happen in small, in small businesses, small, medium businesses. And this is where we're going. We want to see to it that there's so many of these small and medium businesses that come on stream to do this because they can. This is not a type of industry where you require large businesses all the time. You can actually do it with small businesses, but you need to then create them and make sure that they are on, they are on board. In terms of how many people there are in the trader, I think there's about 20 of them, about 20 people that are running this business, Honorable Ganeke. I must say that we do not have as yet, Honorable Ganeke, any person with disabilities. We do not yet have anyone. But it's something that we're mindful of, that at some point, because there's nothing that precludes people with disability from entering our industry or even entering the state diamond trade, nothing at all. In terms of planning to counteract the challenges,
can I just ask you, Chair?
Before you pass, Chair, I'm just happy that there's no one. Well, there's space for me.
Yeah, the chairperson of the board, the CEO, and the CFO is here. I believe they're the person that needs to make the application.
You need to buy me a bottle of whiskey. I think the issue of the run of mine on the Honorable Samete is an important one. We mention it in passing, and yet it's quite critical in the context of, you know, having an impact. And you're probably making an impression now about the state diamond trader being an entity that makes a plan in spite of, you know, the limitations of the Act and the challenges of the trade and the sales and so on. That, you know, cherry-picking that the chief executive is talking about happens because that 10% run of mine is not a given in the context of that access, you know, that Honorable Mbuni spoke about earlier. The diamonds are there, there is access. However, if people find that what is in the parcel is not useful for their local initiative, then it doesn't help you. So the board has raised this issue, Honorable Chair, about whether or not this issue of the run of mine shouldn't be examined you know, for the future to enable this development going forward. We have to start somewhere, I understand, as a country. However, experience has shown that not all of what is in this 10% in this proverbial parcel is actually useful for local beneficiation. So I'm going to leave it there because it is a matter that is really under spotlight, and I'm happy that it was brought in by both honorable members. Chair, I think we have effectively answered or attempted to answer
most. What are the plans?
I think on the one hand, in terms of the plan, you know, there's quite a lot of momentum in terms of what the minister is working on in this year and going beyond, in terms of, you know, repositioning the state diamond trader, if I may put it like that. And that is, we're working towards that with the ministry, and we want to see where, you know, because that you know, seems to be the way to go. But at the same time, internally as we are, I do always like to say that at these international forums and diamond conferences and congresses that we sit, that even the international players are talking about this issue that, you know, diamonds are not promoted and marketed in the way that they should be. Now, if there is no marketing as such and promotion, then we just all are relying on people going to the shops instead of us making sure that we promote and market, even for the young ones, still in high school, to be interested in coming to our industry, not just as consumers, but as, you know, people with new ideas on new applications and designing and et cetera, and make careers out of diamond beneficiation. And so we are also embarking on our own marketing and promotion strategy, and we're not just promoting the state diamond traders, you know, we aren't there. We're promoting diamonds for, you know, them being diamonds, in order to make sure that therefore we get more knowledge, more consumers, and more come in into the beneficiation sector of diamonds. So it's quite a lot that we're trying to put in place on our own, but also, you know, being led by the minister in terms of the position she wants to take state diamond trader to, and also just the whole industry, what she's planning to make sure that the industry grows again. So thank you for that, Chair.
And I think through you, Chair, if I can add, the minister as representative of government has got a much broader view of the state of minerals in South Africa, diamonds being just one of those, and this is about the issue about why we are here, and that talks to, you know, that basic understanding by the entire South African population about what we have as a country. What does it look like? What does it mean? What is its use out there? And having to really look at the entire appreciation of our assets in South Africa also is a journey. It's not something that, you know, we're going to achieve tomorrow. We talk about diamonds and then the cutting and polishing, but I think the concern of government and what we all should be concerned about is, do we all understand enough of what we have so that we can then start extrapolating at individual sector level what the public is exposed to and where that exposure should start. Should it start at school? Should it start at tertiary level? And should there be other partnerships that we form with private sector to train people in terms of understanding these resources? These are the discussions that we are having ourselves and also with the minister as well. And your contributions as chair of the committee will be highly valued in this regard. It is a matter of serious concern.
Thank you. And on Chairperson, just kind of like, you know, the diamond trade sounds like a local domestic tourism, where our small diamonds can't be bought here. And it's the small people, they're like us, can buy the small ones and the big ones. We don't want it to be like a tourism where we can't enjoy our own beautiful country, where we can't enjoy our own minerals, where we can't enjoy anything else. Most of the people that I know can't afford to actually buy extra. So we must try and keep the small ones and create job opportunities for people to start doing the small ones, because you must be very, very skilled to do one carat and above. Thank you. I've been in the diamond cutting there, so I'm talking about all the clients coming here with the diamond cutter. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And so, Chair, we must create our own short list, in the diamond industry.
Chair, to give two applications for every one diamond cutter. First, we have to serve on the board.
2014,
we've seen them work. Chairperson, I just want to ask on two issues on the strategic plan. A lot of emphasis being put on the training of new entries into the business. saying is only four are still with the SDP. The rest is all left. And then there's the new trainees, two factors, how many, for five trainees at the HOH in Kimberley. Now, I mean, your strategic objective is to create 100 new entries into this opportunity, job opportunity. At this rate, it's going to take almost 20 years to get there. So what is the situation? What are you doing, Chair? And then, Chair, of great concern, if you look on page 30, in terms of the salaries, there's a reflection of the salary of the chief executive officer, which in terms of quite on paper there seems quite handsome. But then many of those positions, like the company secretary, outsourced. Human research officer, outsourced. External officers, outsourced. So, once again, we have a situation where this state diamond trader is actually using consultants to do the work. Many of the four jobs have been done by people that have been outsourced. What is the situation on this matter?
Thank you, Chair. Just to start with the first point, I think that the one area about training, there is training which is, you know, internal, for internal capacity, and then there is facilitation for client development, which is a separate, those are two separate ones. Internally, yes, indeed, we're talking about the four people that we took on in 2010, and as we sit now, we have, you know, retained three of them. Only one left last year. When did she leave? I can't remember exactly, but only one has recently left. And the five that are at HOH, which is that 6-month intensive course that I did allude to earlier, Honorable Sinclair. All of that training is for potential internal consumption, you know, employment in the end. That is now looking at our own capacity as the state diamond trader, what is it that we require and how we're going to work with young people, and we give them, you know, as trainees, they are with us for 3 years, you know, at the moment there are some that have been with us actually for 3 years as we speak, so even the others, and the ones that have just come back from their 6-month training, they still have that 2.5 years or so with us, you know, going forward. And whether they're going to stay or not will be determined by a number of factors at that point in time. Mm-hmm. Indeed, we require, you know, hundreds and even more jobs to be created and SME development to happen at industry level now. That is for the growth of the industry and external to the state diamond trader as an organization, but now to grow the industry. And that is where we then get to facilitating training for clients ranging from business skills to marketing skills and etc. So there is that distinction, internal and external, but all of this will, in the end, talk to the growth of the industry and the state diamond trader in there. The second part of the question, I'm not even sure if I should be the one answering it, Honorable Sinclair, especially when you talk about it being handsome. I think that I should not be talking to that third part of the
Thank you, Chair. I am not in a position to address the value, especially when someone is cooking, you know, in a room and you are talking about their own income. It does get to be a bit sensitive and awkward as well.
However, I think the general norm is the salaries, all salaries have to be approved, salaries of CEOs as well as fees of the board members work within a particular level that is revised or reviewed by the Department of Mineral Resources on an annual basis in consultation with Treasury. So nothing that we see here, Chair, has happened outside of those rules and outside of that environment. And I think the issue of outsourcing is an important question that needs to be put in context, and I ask the COC to continue.
Honourable Sinclair, yes, I was just thinking about the hands on this, and I'm thinking that, Honourable Chair, earlier on you said this is an OSD type of environment, but I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
The outsourcing here, when I pointed out earlier, Honourable Sinclair, about the HR plan and the decision to start employing from critical, you know, areas of the organogram downward. You know, when we looked at it, we said that company secretary, while, you know, there are compliance issues that we require from that position, that's not critical for this business to then have a certain now. And we did put in, you know, years, that there are a number of years that at this point in time would be ready to employ people at that level. And so, I mean, companies that may well be employed through the course of this year, depending, etc. But at the same time, the whole the outsourcing was done, therefore, in line with what we regarded as these key skills that we want, and also looking at the budget and whatever we have and we can make potentially. And we are mindful of the fact that these are outsourced, and, but at the same time, this is not about just using consultants to do the work. It's just those skills that we can at the moment not afford to bring into the organization only at the moment, and going forward, we are looking at employing, you know, from the organograph to fill in, you know, in different ways, and having been determined through a thorough research of what is it that is key for this institution. So we are, of course, filling some of the positions, but over time, not at the same time, on the position.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, we operate in a light and open environment, not in a dark environment, where people must be sensitive when we speak about these issues. So it's not about that. I mean, it's a public document. Anybody can pick it up and read it. It's just the way that you perceive it. So that is not the problem. The problem is the issue about bringing in people that must assist you to do the work, firstly. But secondly, and more importantly, if this entity drops from a profit to a loss of this amount, then we start to ask the questions about bonus performances and all those type of things. So it's about scrutinizing the whole package. It's not about sort of picking on small issues. So I'm addressing So in terms of that, I want to ask the chairperson of the board if the officials during this financial year got their bonuses despite the fact that the profitability of the entity dropped substantially.
Chair, that did not happen. And it's an unfortunate situation, and I'm saying unfortunate again that, you know, some of them are sitting here. In that when things are out of your control in the context of your performance indicators, you know, an entity and its board should look at things differently. However, I think in my view, it starts with how the performance agreement is structured. And if it's structured to identify certain key things and achievement of certain objectives and not achieved, what you see at the end, bonus is just a payment. It starts with the achievement of those objectives, and that then leads to whether or not there should be a bonus payment. And I think there is a need to recognize the key drivers of an organization of this nature and start at the beginning to put on the table or in that performance agreement those things that are within the control of an individual official. Secondly, the performance linked to the performance of the company and how everybody in the organization shares in the success of or otherwise of that performance. But you know, in this case, it didn't happen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, CEO, and CFO. You know, if you look at the package of the CEO, I wouldn't say it's such an excellent package. Honestly, compare. Yeah, compare. I mean, you do get smaller entities. The packages are much, much, much higher than it is at the moment. But members, be that as it may, I don't think they themselves determine the package. The CEO would have determined the package would have been under an handsome pack, a handsome figure of about 4. You know, all about that. So they don't determine it. So I think as a committee, you've got quite some task to do in assisting the state diamond trader in that regard. And when we engage again with, because we also as a committee, has got the oversight of the IPC, as well as the CIFA and TMR as well. So I think what we need to do, taking this forward, we need to engage with these type of entities. You know, the only worrying factor that I've got is the closeness with the dealers and yourself. Because it's pushing away and making other companies very scared of dealing with the trade, with the SDG, because they say, no, it's a De Beers type of operation. And that's why we will push from the department side and from the ministry side, we will engage with them for state funding. Because by then, it will just justify state diamond trader gets funding from the state and not from the outside companies or conglomerates. Well then, because it is through the world today, they hand a feature, or the guy with the guitar hand, you have to dance to that tune of the music. So at the end, it will just make also your work lighter, so that you don't go stand with a bucket hand at the beers, and those type of places, but at least that you know you get your money from the fiscus, you report to the fiscus, and the Auditor General, until then, take it forward from there. Just on a couple of these things that I think we should take forward and we should take note of also as a committee and yourself, is in terms, again, the funding model, the capitalization of the SDG. We need to place members, just give a chance, because we as a committee, we have to engage with TMR. And even if we have to call Treasury, we will have to engage with them to find out and look at the funding model of SDT. I think also SDT, the finalization of your sales strategy, including your marketing strategy and your implementation plan. Because, like Honorable Abrams has said, it's chances that you just market in London because you've got to compete there with Botswana Diamonds and who else there is. But also look in us at our short-lived diamond strategy, diamond campaign. The Hoshi of Limpopo, also, she also wears diamonds. You know? So we need to look at all of this. We put a Hoshi in our list, the Honorable Bihari. So we also need to look at that, how we can, Honorable Nguni, who's recently married, needs to reset, because they say after each second marriage year, you need to buy a new set of wedding gifts, wedding rings or wedding bands. I'm not sure of that. We need to look at that insight, how we can do that insight. Also, the amendment of the current legislation to address the 10% requirement. also, from your side, what are you doing to amend or come up with amendments to DMR as well as to us as Parliament? Cement the partnership with the private enterprise, and not just with the peers, but also with our higher education institutions, FET colleges, because there is the technical skills, is there. We just need to go look, take it out. You guys knows about policy. You guys knows how to make a rough diamond to shine in sparkles. You've got the know-how, you've got the expertise to do that. Also align your business strategy overall in terms of with the government priority. As for the NDP, as for the new growth path, as for IPAC, and all those. Also strengthen your organizational capacity to meet government and organizational objectives. Reposition the organization to improve industry performance. Also I want to leave you with this question, but this you can also put down in writing. As you say, what is the level of demand for diamonds in the African market? I think the chairperson has already alluded to that. But there is a big demand. There is a very big demand for diamonds. And as I think Honorable Avon said, or one of the members says that, we can't pay the prices that has been established on the London Stock Exchange, on the New York Stock Exchange, and that. You know, we need to pay the prices of that. Also, at what level of beneficiation are the diamonds targeted for the export markets? Like I said, you know, once some of I think it was, what is this place that we went to so far in the northern thing? A mine, a diamond mine, Arabsco. At one stage, when we visited Arabsco, we had a public meeting with the community. And the community was saying to us that they know nothing about diamonds. All they do is just take out the diamonds, and from there, get taken from them, get lost, goes into safety box from there, a helicopter picks it up, take it to Joburg, and all that. They know nothing. Some of them were asking questions on which export market are these diamonds been sold? Which stock exchange, or where has it been sold? It's been told to them that it's none of your business where these things are going. So the community was then asking that we are diving down there. How can it be that these guys are fetching high prices on the export market? We don't know where they are. You know, I think even the MD that time of Arabsco did not even know about the export strategy and that. But I think you should reposition also yourself in terms of that you can have a say in the export of the diamonds. Also part of, even if you have to change the act, our friend there from GMR, even if we have to change some of the things in the Diamond Act, we need to do that just to give the SDT a bit of more teeth and a bit of more money. Because it says that you have an entity, but with no devotee and not right. And it's got no say how to expand and run the entity. Chairperson, parting shot from you, because we are pressed for time.
So, Chair, I really want to, on behalf of the board, the team at the State Dharma Trader, and really on behalf of the Department of Mineral Resources, thank you very, very much for this wonderful opportunity. We always have to be challenged in order to grow and improve. As I said, we started somewhere as a State Diamond Trader because the government had a vision. We cannot go back now. We have to continue to learn and understand why is it that certain countries do what they do. Why is it that a country like Dubai, for example, that doesn't have a single ounce of diamond under its sandy shores, is now the biggest attraction as far as the diamond beneficiation sales, etc., and trading is concerned. And therefore, the foundation has been laid, and the questions we've had this morning are generating a huge amount of motivation, you know, for us to go even further and beyond what we were talking about and discussing in our engagement with the minister as well in this regard. We believe that every question is valid. We may have attempted answers, but I can assure you, Chair and Honourable Members, that we have taken a lot of these questions under a great advisement in that we are going to examine whether our own initiatives and analyze whether or not they are sufficient and continue to improve. Yes, Chair, we can continue to look to legislation to improve what's happening. However, I think within the confines of what we have to always find a way of improving where we stay. I think the biggest support, Chair, we can ever look for in a committee of this nature is how the funding strategy should look like. And as I said earlier, it takes shape when your strategy is understood and is supported, you know, by government, and then you are able to then say what is appropriate in terms of funding. Chair, we must believe in small, micro and medium enterprise because I think it is the future. And I think there has been a question, especially a question that we noted here, you know, from Honourable Abram is one around how small micro and medium enterprises need to be supported. And what the State Diamond Trader may not have the capacity to be able to do that, I think the role must be one of facilitation. And I'm glad, Chair, to hear that this committee has got oversight on entities like the IDC. The IDC is represented on the board of the State Diamond Trader, so these things are actually very visible to the IDC. If you go to the IDC and you go into a lift, you see in one of the lifts the picture of a woman who is termed to be an SME and the support of the IDC over an SME. I think we need to work in partnership with entities like that to be able to create the funding necessary for the small businesses to access the diamonds, because otherwise it remains just a threat line in the piece of legislation, open access to diamonds. If these small businesses cannot afford to buy these diamonds from the State Diamond Trader, we will not achieve the transformation that we seek. So, Chair, thank you very much for you know, the invitation, the challenges you know that we were given today, but also the undertaking to give the necessary support you know that is required to position this entity in its rightful place in terms of the transformation of the beneficiation industry. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think members, we will have to when we are in the parts of the north, you know, I'm going from the south, so I don't like traveling to the north for so long. Marihari. And then you are from the north, but you love the south.
I know you like Mobile. Don't travel to the north, don't you?
Yeah, but when we travel to the north, I think, colleagues, it's, we must go and visit the district and look at the facilities before we start with honorable Sinclair moving into Kimberley. And the facilities are good in the north, Jefferson, that we will then make up our mind. But we will definitely come and give you a visit. It will be arranged by the Secretary of the Committee. But let me thank you also, our colleagues of Kimberley. Is there anything you want to say about
that? No,
No, nothing, Chairman. You sure? No, sure. Okay. No, thank you. Jefferson, CEO and CFO, thank you very much I see that you have taken this committee and the invite very serious, and we really appreciate that you have come yourself. You know, it's really an honor for us to have you here, and it's our first engagement with each other, but I hope it's not our last engagement. And before we arise before Parliament arrives, that we will make it there in your territory and look and see. And maybe we need some of us need some shaping up, some polishing up. We would really like to see that. But thank you very much for the engagement. It was fruitful engagement from our side and your side. And now we've got an understanding about the state and the trader. And we want to wish you well in your future endeavors. And if there's anything that you need, please don't hesitate on calling on this committee. We believe in the slogan, and not just in the slogan, but we believe in working together, we can do more. We believe in that, and I want to thank you for that. Members, thank you very much. Chair, the person. Members, we have got an invitation to the TC. On energy, was having a meeting on Friday with Eskom on the MYPD3 and NERSA and SAUGA. So these are the old assembly chambers from 9 to 1. So if any members are free to go, please, unfortunately, I've got to go and brief my province on the tourism boat. So, and you know, my province is I have to take about 5 flights and 2 boats to get to my legislature and still go through a passport control to get to my legislature. You know, the passport control, that is the thing that emphasizes because it's a republic on its own.
We'll organize a blue passport, please.
So I was thinking of landing at Batterdorf Airport Station to make it easier to issue the Western Cape legislature. But those members that are interested in going to the portfolio committee, please indicate to the Secretary Grace so that she can then forward your name to the portfolio committee. Let me thank the members, Honorable Gamene, Nguni, Abrams, Ikhali, Honorable Sinclair. I know your passion is the state diamond trader, and I know you won't rest until it is in Kimberley. But thank you for that wonderful, robust engagement that we had in this committee, and also to our staff members, Martins, Adumo, Grace, and Sibele. Thank you very much, and also to our great staff member who has walked in now, Mr. Becca. Is there anything on your heart for tomorrow, Mr. Becca? You have peace. You've got peace. Okay. Although Orlando Pirate has won the cup, you've got peace. Okay. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.